actually couldn't have been a better introduction to the second half of my talk. But I'll start with the big picture. My talk is about the male-female health survival paradox, and I have to master this. And this is a collaboration between the Boom Project researchers and Jim Appel and Cor Christensen. What is the male-female health survival paradox? Well, Lois Verbrugge put it nicely in 1985 when she said, as long as vital statistics, health surveys, and medical and hospital records have been available for the United States, they've shown higher mortality rates for men, but higher rates of morbidity in health services for women. And this is actually true not just in the United States, but in all nations in which it's been examined, which is primarily Western industrialized countries. And a big question is, why is this so? And that question motivated, to a great extent, a PO1 grant that Jean and I submitted with Jim Vapel and Cor Christensen that was funded by NIA, that was intended to really try to understand both parts of the paradox in some detail, the higher male mortality and the higher female morbidity, both by looking at humans and testing a range of hypotheses in humans, that was Cor and Jim's components, and by trying to develop a non-human animal model of the paradox. And that was our piece. So the male-female health survival paradox, of course, is typified on the one hand by women having typically longer life expectancies than men. This has been documented since the first ever sex-specific life tables were put together for Holland and France in the mid-1700s. And 2.5 centuries later, the pattern still holds. It's best documented in Western industrialized societies, as I mentioned, but a female survival advantage has been, as I understand it, seen in virtually every human population, contemporary human population that's been examined, and also typifies, during at least some periods, all of these three hunter-gatherer populations, suggesting that it potentially has deep evolutionary roots, or at least deep historical roots. The health part of the paradox, the data for this are confined to, as I said, more Western industrialized societies. Women generally have poorer health than men in that men self-report better health throughout life. Men are physically stronger throughout life, have fewer limitations in activities of daily living. Women show higher average reported numbers of incidents for this whole range of diseases. This is only a subset. There are others. This list could go on. There are some diseases that men suffer from at higher rates than women. Cardiovascular diseases, of course, famously, are more prevalent among men. Men are more frequently injured than women. And my favorite, gout. Gout is just sort of an example of a few diseases that men are more vulnerable to than women. But on the whole, it swings the other direction. Two nice reviews of this, 22 years apart, if you're interested in learning more. So this talk is framed under the conceptual umbrella of the health survival paradox, and it has two empirical parts. One part asks the question, what do health and survival patterns in humans living in demographic circumstances look like relative to the industrialized West? Do they show a non-paradoxical pattern? And this work is primarily the work of Cor Christensen and Jim Vapel, and I'm presenting on their behalf. This is not my area of expertise, but I've been schooled by them, so I'll do my best. And then the second part, as I mentioned, is health and survival in a non-human primate population with the intention of asking, can we find an animal model for the health survival paradox? So with respect to the human data, health and survival patterns in unusual demographic circumstances, Cor set out to ask three particular questions that I'm mentioning here. I should say that PO1 has had a pretty wide-ranging set of questions and results, but the set that we're presenting here, we thought provided a nice contrast. So is the male health advantage present in a contemporary Russian population with extreme excess mortality? The logic of the question here is that in modern Russia, as you'll see in a minute, the male-female difference in life expectancy is the most extreme that's ever been recorded. And Cor hypothesized that given such an extreme difference between men and women in life expectancy, perhaps the male health advantage would start to diminish or even disappear. He also asked whether the female survival advantage was present in the late 19th and early 20th century Mormon population in Utah. The logic of this question is that that was a population characterized by extraordinarily high fertility until about the turn of the 20th century. They entered the demographic transition late, and low male risk-taking behavior because social norms of the Mormon church prescribed smoking and drinking. And then finally, was the female survival advantage present in other 19th and early 20th century human populations? How far back in history can we document it? And what was it like relative to the modern one? So with respect to the first question about Russia, these are the data on life expectancy. You can see that the second column, which is difference in life expectancy in years, the female advantage, has actually grown since 1953, reached an extreme level of 13 and a half years in 2005, has now fallen to about 12 years, which means that the life expectancy of a woman at 75 is actually 12 years longer. The life expectancy of a Russian man is 63 years. Causes of death for young and middle-aged adults, cardiovascular diseases is the biggest cause of death. Violence and accidents and alcohol-related causes are also important. The question is, in this context, do we still see a male health advantage? And the answer is yes for self-rated health. What you see here on the y-axis is the percent of individuals that are reporting poor or fair self-rated health as opposed to good health. Russian women are the top line. Russian men are the middle line. And these two lower lines are Danes, women in dashed line, men in solid lines. The Danes show a female disadvantage in health, but it's very slight, and Russian men and women show a larger gap between each other and are greater than the Danes. The answer is also yes for the ability to climb one flight of stairs. Again, the top level is Russian women. The second one is Russian men, and here are Danes who are catching up to Russian men in their 70s and 80s, but don't achieve the level of Russian women. The answer is also yes for the ability to carry a bag of groceries. 40% of Russian women in the late 50s report they're unable to carry a bag of groceries, compared to 18% for men. And yes, for depression. Russian women also experience higher rates of depression. So in spite of an extraordinary difference in life expectancy, the male health advantage in Russia appears to be even greater than it is in the West, where the survival advantage for women is less extreme. What about the Mormon population? As I mentioned, the social norms of the Mormon church suggest that male mortality may be lower than in other populations at the same time, no smoking or drinking. Women had very high fertility. And so Core predicted that the female longevity advantage in Utah would be lower in the middle of the 19th century and would gradually increase as fertility dropped and women's survival increased, presumably in response to that. And he compared it with Denmark and Sweden during the same period. And the answer to that question, was the female survival advantage present in the late 19th century, is yes. Pay attention to the first panel. The y-axis is cohort life expectancy as a function of birth cohort year. The dark line is women, and the dashed line is men in all of these, all three of these panels. This is Utah. In the first 20 years of settlement on the frontier, there was very little sex difference in survival, and mortality, not shown here, was quite high. But very quickly after the settlement period, women showed the typical advantage in survival long before fertility began to drop, long before the demographic transition kicked in. This is Sweden and Denmark in the same period, and you can see that the female survival advantage in Utah is actually higher than it is for Sweden or Denmark. That's shown here. This is the sex difference. The y-axis here is the number of years different in female and male life expectancy as a function of birth cohort. Very low difference in those first 20 years of settlement when there were extreme hardships and famines and high mortality. But soon after that, the female survival advantage actually exceeds that of Sweden and Denmark. So the female survival advantage, again, is present in a somewhat surprising context. is this component of the paradox. We don't have health data for the woman's. Was the female survival advantage present in other 19th and 20th century populations? Well, yes, but it was smaller than it is today. And in fact, I'll go back to this panel that I just showed you and point out how rapidly in both Utah, Sweden, and Denmark, the female survival advantage is increasing between 1850 and about 1920. Here, the data are shown slightly differently. This is the sex difference in survival in France as a function of years between about 1810 and the 2000s, this time divided into life expectancy at different ages. So the solid line is life expectancy at birth, the dashed line is life expectancy at age 15, and this line is life expectancy at age 65 and above. And in all cases, the female survival advantage is increasing quite dramatically over the decades. Life expectancy, life expectancy in adulthood is not increasing dramatically. In middle adulthood is not increasing dramatically, but there is still a female advantage. Here's the data, a different set of data shown in a slightly different way. Again, the y-axis is the male-female gap. As a function of age for five different populations, the lowest population line here is Sweden in the 1900s, and the other populations are all populations in this century, the first 15 years of this century. The female survival advantage at all ages, except for very early infancy, is or childhood, is higher now than it was in Sweden in the 1900s. So the female survival advantage appears to be growing. Typical of the Swedish population, I'm told, is typical of other European 18th and 19th century populations. So even when the female survival advantage is at its most extreme in 21st century Russia, females do not appear to have a health advantage. A female survival advantage occurs even when male risk-taking behavior is low and female fertility is high. Female survival advantage is typical of historical populations, not universal, but common. And female survival advantage in European populations has grown over time. In other words, the advent of modern medicine has benefited female longevity substantially more than it has benefited male longevity. So with that empirical piece about the human health survival paradox, let's move to a different place under the health survival paradox umbrella and talk about baboons as a potential model for a non-human health survival paradox. So just to tell you a little bit about baboons, although you already know quite a bit, first I'll tell you about the Amboseli Baboon Project. It was begun in 1971. We have about 300 individuals extant in the population, observed on a near daily basis in multiple social groups. Baboon populations are subdivided into stable social groups composed of multiple adults of both sexes and multiple juveniles. These animals are highly sexually dimorphic, among the most sexually dimorphic of the primates. This is an adult male being groomed by an adult female who is half his body mass. Individuals within social groups can be linearly ranked according to their ability to win social conflicts. Of course, we call this a dominance hierarchy or a social status hierarchy. And for females, as Steve Sumi explained yesterday, social status is determined to a great extent by maternal rank. There's a nepotistic pattern of rank inheritance, as Joan mentioned, such that females help their daughters and their sisters attain rank adjacent to them. For males, dominance rank has no nepotistic component, and males are on their own. It's their own fighting ability that determines the rank they eventually attain. Last piece of baboon biology I'm going to tell you is that when females are in the follicular phase of their sexual cycle, they have this swelling on their rear end, which increases in size until just after ovulation, then decreases during the luteal phase. And during these times, they're typically guarded by adult males in mate guarding episodes. Virtually all mating takes place in the context of these mate guarding episodes, which are the causes of intense competition among males. We see a sex difference in baboon mortality that is characterized by higher adult male mortality than adult female mortality. Males are blue, females are red. The y-axis is age-specific mortality, x-axis is age. And in fact, The mortality component of the health survival paradox is very well supported. Males have higher mortality in adulthood than females. And this is another way of looking at the data. The y-axis, again, is this is the log of the age-specific mortality as a function of age in years. And these are the fits of the Gompertz models that describe male mortality and female mortality. And you can see that Gompertz parameter B, the rate of acceleration in aging, is higher for males than it is for females. What about the health part of the paradox? Well, this is the first non-human animal model of the health survival paradox. And as you can imagine, measuring health in the wild non-invasively is very challenging, especially longitudinally. So we did a lot of head scratching in the first few years of this grant. We had some very clear ideas, but it took us a while to figure out how to put together a combination of historical data and newly collected data to get robust measures of health that we were happy with. And here's what we have, body mass index. Most of these are longitudinal. This is the only one we measure cross-sectionally. We rely on darting animals. We dart about 20 animals a year, so it's a very low-intensity process for us. We don't want to disrupt the animals. And we measure body mass and crown rump length, which allows us to get a body mass index. We look at glucocorticoids extracted from fecal samples. Joan mentioned that they do this also in Marini. We look at the number of individual parasite species that a baboon hosts in its intestinal tract. And we also look at the burden of one particular species, the whipworm, Trichuris, which is particularly pathogenic, I'm told by my colleagues. We look at the incidence of illness. We look at them with binoculars. We're not taking blood pressure or listening to their hearts, and or taking their temperature, and so we rely on visual signs of illness, and baboons are very good at hiding signs of illness, much like house cats, I'm told. And so our sample size here is small, but extremely revealing, as I think you'll see. We look at fecal sex steroids, collected in the same way that we collect the fecal glucocorticoids, and we look at the rate of injuries. Injuries are much more common than illnesses. Body mass index. This is an adult female with a high body mass index at the age of 6, young adulthood. This is a female with low body mass index at the age of 24, old age. There's a significant, the y-axis on all of these is the measure of interest, and the x-axis is always age in years, although I don't have them all labeled. There's a significant change with age for both sexes. They increase with age and then increase until prime years and of adulthood and then decrease in old age. Blue is always males, red is always females. In this case, males are significantly higher than females in body mass index, but there's no sex difference in the rate of change with age in body mass index. Similarly, with glucocorticoid concentrations, both sexes show hypercortisolism with age, as is also typical in humans, but there's no significant sex difference in levels or in the rate of change with age. Gastrointestinal parasite species richness, again, there's a significant increase with age in both sexes, but no difference between the sexes in the rate of change with age. Same with whipworm burden. Significant increase in both sexes, but no significant difference between the sexes. So in all four of these measures, we can see senescence in these health-related measures. We can see changes with age, deterioration with age, but no difference in the patterns between the sexes. In the next few, we're going to see male-female differences. So with respect to illnesses, we see a significant increase with age for both sexes, but males are experiencing a steeper increase with age than females. And sex steroid hormone concentrations, there's a significant decrease with age for males, quite a striking decrease in testosterone, but no change with age in estrogen content, in estrogen excretion for females. So females do not go through reproductive senescence in the middle of life and then have a long post-reproductive lifespan. They reproduce until well into old age. So males are deteriorating more rapidly than females on this measure. And then finally, for injuries, we see a significant increase with age for females and a significant decrease with age for males, but we wouldn't call this a situation where males are better off than females because males end up at the same level in old age that females end up at. So because this is also a talk about a workshop about sociality, I want to point out that males also deteriorate more rapidly than females in two important aspects of the social environment. I've already told you how we measure social status, social rank. What I haven't said is that rank is extremely important in determining reproductive success for both sexes. For males, it has a big impact on mating opportunities. Higher ranking males have higher mating opportunities. And for females, it also affects fertility in that it shortens birth intervals. So we know that dominance rank is important. Dominance rank also affects the age at which you reach maturity. You seem to be accelerating your maturational schedule if you have a mother who's high ranking. Probably all this is about access to nutritional resources. So in social status, what we have on the y-axis is high rank at the top of the axis, low rank at the bottom of the axis as a function of age. You can see that although females do decline somewhat with age in dominance rank, the pattern is not nearly as dynamic as it is for males, who reach a very high rank early in adulthood during their prime years and then fall rather dramatically throughout the rest of life. And so this more rapid deterioration in social status for males is mirrored in social connectedness. Our social connectedness measure is very similar to Jones' sociality index. It's an aggregate measure of grooming relative to other individuals in your social group, both grooming and being groomed. And the y-axis here shows connected individuals on the top part of the axis, isolated individuals on the bottom part of the axis. For females, there is a decline with age in social connections with adult females. For males, again, there's a hump-shaped. Males increase until prime age and then dramatically decline so that older males are very socially isolated on the whole. So the $64,000 question for us is, to what extent do these measures affect survival? Jones already told you that in Warimi, they found that social connectedness of females to females affects female survival. Well, we have a similar result in Amboseli. Social connectedness predicts female survival. The y-axis here is the survivorship. You can see, and this is age. The females in the 25th percentile of connectedness to other females live about 2 years longer at the median than females who are in the 75th percentile of connectedness to other adult females. A piece that we've added is we've asked, what about females' relationships with adult males? Do those also contribute to survivorship? And in fact, they do. Both connectedness to males and connectedness to females contribute independently and at about the same magnitude to survivorship. The effect for males is slightly larger, if anything.
Survivorship of females.
This is survivorship of females. This is females being connected to, adult males on this panel or adult females on this. So these are different relationships, both connecting and predicting independently survivorship. We haven't yet asked the question about adult males. Adult males are a little trickier because it's harder to measure mortality in adult males, but we're working on that. Now, social rank, presence of kin, and group size had no effect on female survival when social connectedness was included in the model, but all of them themselves are predictors of social connectedness. And I'm going to show you that, and that's my last slide. So connectedness to other females is predicted by age, as I already mentioned, although it's a less dramatic relationship than it is for males. Younger females have higher connectedness. Joan very nicely demonstrated that females depend on their mothers and their daughters for social connectedness as a female and their peers. As a female ages, she loses her peers, a euphemism for having them eaten by leopards. Her mother also dies. She gains in number of adult daughters, but as they mature, they become increasingly occupied with their own offspring, with her granddaughters. So she loses connections to adult females as she ages. She also trades off connectedness to males. It looks like they don't have time to cultivate close relationships with both. So there's a weak negative correlation between connectedness with males and connectedness with females. connectedness to males is predicted by social dominance rank. Higher ranking females have higher connectedness to adult males. We think this reflects the fact that males are a resource for which females compete, and higher ranking females are more effective at gaining that resource. Group size matters because males are disproportionately more abundant in larger groups, and here again is that trade-off between connectedness to males and connectedness to females. So in conclusion, wild baboons don't show a male-female health survival paradox to the extent that we can measure now. On all the health measures we examined, males are deteriorating at a similar or higher rate than females. Males also deteriorated more than females on social measures, social status, and social connectedness, and that may well be contributing to their higher mortality. We don't know that yet. Connectedness to both males and females affects female survival, and social status affects female survival only indirectly because it affects connectedness to adult males. And I'm done.